Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's a very good session, I think, today because it represents 1 year of very hard work on behalf of very many people in this community. So thank you for coming. Next week is our panel discussion on the heroin epidemic in upstate central New York. We have people from across the medical field as well as the law enforcement field talking about that. And so I hope we'll see you for that very important discussion. I would like to now introduce Peter Sarver, who is not only a Thursday Morning Roundtable member, but was very, very involved in the study.
Good morning. I also carry a hat called the ex-convener for Moving People Transportation Coalition. So it was my pleasure to be working with Mary Kate and Heidi during the whole study process, and of course to introduce them this morning. To start off, I'd like to see how many of you walked here. And no, the parking lot doesn't count. How many of you biked here? Pete? You didn't bike? Our one bike rider didn't bike. Oh, well. How about the who took Centro? No Centro riders? Oh, where? Oh, all right. You redeemed yourself, Pete. Thank you. Well, what's left? Anybody drive here in a vehicle? Oh, look at that. Well, you know, whether you believe it or not, given your current behavior, things are changing. Things are changing about the transportation. Last night, we had 120 people at the Samaritan Center discussing I-81 issues. So people are very concerned about not only how we move, but the infrastructure that supports different kinds of options. And this report is going to give you a sense of that. And let me just introduce the two speakers who are co-chairs. Mary Kate Intaglietta is perhaps known to you as the Baltimore Woods Executive Director, but she now has a new position. She's Executive Director of a group fighting for pediatric cancer, and that is the Pages Butterfly Run. So she's got a proven track record, successful fundraising events for both national and local not-for-profits, and she was awarded by Under 40, the more youthful group in town here, with the Under 40 Award, and now serves also as an advisory board member for Maureen's Hope Foundation. Heidi Holtz, different generation, has been with the... Excuse me. That wasn't in the script, by the way, so you can't... Heidi Holtz has been with the Gifford Foundation since 2005, serving first as a director of grant-making. Since 2011, she's the director of research and projects, so this was right up her alley. But her background is such that many of you may know she's served as an adjunct professor at Maxwell and the Department of Drama at Syracuse University. And before coming to the Gifford Foundation, she worked for 25 years in not-for-profit arts administration, including 9 years at Syracuse Stage. She holds a BFA in theater and a Master's of Arts degree in theater history. So please welcome our two speakers this morning.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Peter, for the introduction. Before we really start going through our presentation today on the 2015-16 Onondaga Citizens League study of how CNY moves, we'd like to start off with a short video on Complete Streets, which features the city of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Thinking about a person designing, building, or maintaining streets. In the United States, during the past 60 or so years, your focus was on automobiles. Allowing for coexisting buses and delivery trucks, your focus would have been moving more cars, which meant minimizing obstacles to cars. We pedestrians were among the obstacles. We bikers were among the obstacles. And certainly any of us needing extra time to cross in front of cars to the other side of the car route were obstacles. Well, now, take a breath. Somehow, we have arrived at a new place in our thinking about traffic. Traffic, at last, is us. Not just cars, and those in cars, toing and froing night and day, with royalty-like right-of-way.
The idea of complete streets, or livable streets, as they're also called, rolled out of Oregon in 1971. The legislature decided that any new construction, any reconstruction with state funding, would be people-friendly, pedestrian-friendly, biker-friendly, moms with kids with strollers-friendly. There'd be pullouts for the buses. It'd be a shared thoroughfare, not just for cars anymore.
21st century, second decade thinking is that existing all-car, all-the-time street space often can be used better for the well-being of the community. No one here is talking about converting an expressway into a country lane, but some neighborhoods, such as East Boulevard here in Dilworth, have far greater value as safe and comfortable walking areas rather than buzz-through commuter routes. Charlotte is running toward the front among more than 200 cities and towns acting on the complete streets idea.
Charlotte is seen as a leader nationwide in regards to complete streets, streets that are built by the private development community, which are the vast majority of streets in Charlotte. They also create complete streets.
Design details vary depending on place and circumstance, but the basic elements among complete streets include bike lanes, landscaped pedestrian refuge islands, and pullover lanes for buses to more safely gather and disperse riders. The crossings are pebbled or textured to guide a sightless pedestrian to the safe standing areas. Some cities meander the streets a bit with a few kinks to slow the auto traffic among the pedestrians and bikers.
We go through quite extensive public meetings and public involvement because we want to make sure that we hear from the community and do what they would like to see for their street. And so we have a great record of working both across departments at the city and with the public.
Look, I see a break.
The National Complete Streets Coalition continues advocating what the coalition sees as a timely repurposing of existing infrastructure. More varied traffic can more safely and more healthfully travel using the same amount of space auto commuters have had all to themselves. That point of view is getting noticed as fuel cost, start-from-scratch construction cost, and influential coalition members, such as the American Heart Association and the AARP, combine to communicate the need for change.
Using other modes like transit or their car. So I think nationwide, there seems to be a lot of momentum building in the direction of complete streets as a community benefit.
And besides the health and safety benefits favoring complete streets, there are those numbers. National comparisons show consistently higher property values in what are called walkable neighborhoods. San Francisco, Pittsburgh, Austin, Jacksonville, West Palm Beach, Seattle, Sacramento, Tucson, many others all pull higher resale prices in pedestrian-friendly parts of town.
Before I forget to this morning, on your way out, or if you haven't had a chance to stop and see it on your way in, SMTC was so kind to set up a display with some of their materials outside, so be sure to take a look at it before you leave this morning. So walking, running, biking, driving, catching the bus, how do you move? This was the question at the forefront as we move through OCL's 2015-16 study, How CNY Moves. For the past year, we wanted to learn more about why citizens make the transportation choices they do. Is it time, money, convenience, necessity? In the summer of 2015, OCL held two scoping sessions in which we invited community members to identify potential questions and wishes that they had for our community. These scoping sessions helped to shape the 11 discussion sessions that convened in late 2015 and early 2016. Heidi and I, in addition to various community members, met individually with others and several stakeholders in our community, representatives of local agencies, experts in transportation, planning, and demographics to discuss this topic. In addition to citizen representation, stakeholders participating in panels or presentations included a variety of organizations from Syracuse Onondaga County and County Planning Agency, SMTC, Centro, the Onondaga County Office of the Environment, the Town of DeWitt Planner, Sam Gordon, Bike CNY, the Moving People Transportation Coalition, just to name a few. There were so many more. Overall, there were about 100 people who really helped engage in this very important conversation. This large and timely issue of transportation led us and countless other community members and stakeholders to come together and to share their knowledge, their professional experience, and their stories of navigating our local transportation system, all the while asking, what if? What if we became a more walkable community? What if our public transit system became a more sustainable and rapid and desirable option? What if our entire Onondaga community, from city to towns to villages, committed to a people-centered approach to development that encouraged a safe and intelligent blend of pedestrian, auto, bus, and bicycle connectivity? So as you can see a little bit about our study, we had 2 scoping sessions, 11 listening tours, and about 100 people engaged. We were very fortunate to work with SUNY Oswego Metro, who hosted a number of our discussions, and the town of DeWitt, who hosted one of our scoping sessions as well. Throughout our study, we took a look at the data and history of our city and our town and our county. We had a wonderful presentation at one of our discussion sessions from Dennis Connors of OHA. We go all the way back to 1805 when Syracuse was still known as Salina, and our community was really made up of turnpikes that connected Manlius and Marcellus to our economic center. It was back then that steam-powered railroads were in our community around 1830. We jump a little bit to the first street railway in 1860, and by 1886, we had 17 stage lines that ran from downtown to places like Manlius and Cicero, and we had a line that ran out to Cicero until 1908, so we can really see that some of the sprawl outside the city of Syracuse where the most concentrated population was at that time. Electric cars provided local transit from the late 1800s to early 1940s. And during that time, too, the Rapid Transit Company extended tracks to less populated areas, leading to growth in the southern parts of the city and suburbs. The early 1900s, our electric rail replaced the horse-drawn rail, and the city's electric rail ran through the city, which expanded our residential neighborhoods and enhanced the quality of life. The transportation led to resort lines such as Iron Pier and the White City Resort. As time went by, personal cars eventually became what the majority of our population was using by the 1950s and 60s, which led to increased suburban sprawl to development of smaller towns and communities as more roads were needed. It was then that our bus ridership decreased by about 58%. What we've seen and what you'll see in the study is that 70% of Onondaga County's population lives outside of the city of Syracuse. Our largest suburban populations live in the towns of Salina, of Clay, Manlius, Cicero, and Camillus, which all peaked in the 1970s, and since then have been relatively flat. How we move by car. I'm not sure if you can see the entire graphic that we have, but what it is it looks at the different towns in Onondaga County and shows their average commute time. Just out of curiosity, how many people have longer than 15 or 20-minute commute to get from home to work? Just raise your hand. But for the rest of you, your average commute is about 20 minutes, I'm guessing, correct? Or when you have to go to the grocery store, or when you go to visit friends, too. There's a lot of things. But I think it's safe to say that in our community, we really love and treasure our 20-minute commute that it takes to maybe get from one side of town to the other. One of the most interesting and my personal favorite part of the study was when we talked about ride sharing. And if you participated in a couple of our discussion sessions, you may remember a young gentleman by the name of Lugendo Moyo. And he had an incredible story that talked about how when he was in high school and growing up, he would use his bike to go everywhere. He would use it to get medicine for his family from the grocery store. And I believe he lived on the north side of Syracuse. And he used his bike to help all of his community members. And at sometimes you would see that he had two or three people on his bike, and he would be transporting them in addition to himself. Such a spirit of generosity. And as he got older and he finished high school and went to college and OCC, he actually worked to really start a ride-sharing program in his neighborhood. And what he did was he would share with us that most of the people he knows, they share rides wherever they go. If someone has a car, it's just you don't think twice about offering someone a ride, and you don't think twice about asking them to chip in for gas or maybe buy you a cup of coffee in exchange. It was really one of our most spirited study discussion conversations that we had, and the amount of generosity that you could see that he has towards his community members and how passionate he is about ride sharing is something that you'll see a little bit more throughout the study when it's printed and distributed. For the type of commuter flow we have, the most substantial commuter flow within the region is really within the city of Syracuse, as there's over 35,000 commuters who live and both work in the region. A total of nearly 19,000 people live in the towns of Clay, Cicero, and Salina and work in the city, making this the second largest concentration of communities in the area. So you can see, too, those are mostly the lighter colored towns that are a little bit north of the city of Syracuse. Our average commute time for Onondaga County residents is 19 minutes, which is below the national average of about 25 minutes, and our state average of 31. Locally, the town of DeWitt has the shortest commute by residents, which is about 15.6 minutes, and the town of West Monroe actually has the longest commute by residents, which is 33.1 minutes. When we looked at ride sharing and other opportunities for folks in the community to utilize vehicles, we learned a little bit more about Zipcars. And for those of you who don't know, Zipcar is a service that allows customers to pay to drive a car by the hour or the day. Currently, this operates at Syracuse University and Lemoyne College, which is wonderful for students, especially some who are maybe not from Syracuse and who do need transportation to get to jobs or internships. We have about 16 car zip cars at SU currently. And for college students, this is really a great option because it's $15 to sign up, and you either pay $7.50 an hour or a total of $64 for the day. SU, we learned, also offers a Zimride, which is a private rideshare program that allows anyone who has a Syracuse University email address to find rides or offer seats to other university community members. So the drivers and riders can actually negotiate prices. Last year, we learned about 50 people used this service, and that was according to the SU's Office of Sustainable Division. As far as Uber and the legislation around that, Mayor Minor, in addition to the mayors of Albany, Rochester, and Buffalo, joined together to call for ride-sharing legislation this year, as cities are in need of transportation options that will foster economic development by encouraging people to venture from their communities to the downtown areas for dinner and entertainment or a night out, with a peace of mind that they can get home safely. It provides a flexible solution, and legislation would allow for public safety and commuter protection to be a high priority. At the end of the 2016 New York State legislation system in June, unfortunately, the legislation was not passed that would allow Uber, Lyft, and other ride-sharing companies to operate outside of New York City. Uber and Lyft customers, what they do is they use apps to be able to request a car, see who's driving that car, being able to pay without having to carry cash with them. They could pay in advance, and they can also rate that driver as well.
One of the things I think we learned a lot in here is acronyms, and I realize we just did it ourselves. SMTC stands for the Syracuse Metropolitan Transportation Council. Many people may not even know they have enormous, extraordinary resources around transportation. So, again, they have something outside. So I'm here to talk about Centro, and we had a really fruitful relationship working with Centro. We had a wonderful panel where we had Centro riders as well as the leadership coming and speaking to us. Access and density. Basically, public transportation works best when you have density. And what we have is suburban sprawl, which I think has been we all pretty aware of. We also have, despite criticisms to the contrary, we do have abundant and low-cost parking. Good public transit tends to succeed where there is expensive parking, and we don't have a lot of traffic congestion. We don't have very long commutes. All of those things which can counter against having a very vibrant public transit system. So you have to address different things. Centro, obviously, when it has its funding issues, which I'll talk about in a second, has to address where it goes and what routes it has. And many people say, well, you know, so-and-so route has a very low ridership. So, for example, the Tully to Syracuse route does not have a very high ridership. However, they pointed out to us that they do receive funding from the national government for rural transport. In addition, many of you know that Centro offers Call a Bus, which is a wonderful program that they offer for people with disabilities. And they, if they cut a route, they have to cut the Call a Bus route. So that limits things. So these are sort of things we hadn't realized before. Centro also has works very closely with an advisory group of people with disabilities that they meet with regularly. Their funding stream, we've had Centro come and present here, but there were a few things that we learned about. Many of you know that they have struggled year to year with the state government. We have not in the past had very strong parity between upstate and downstate transit funding. This past year, Senator DeFrancisco did work very hard to make sure that there was more parity, and Centro did see an increase. So we're happy about that, but it means still year to year. And so that's a difficulty for them to have to plan if you don't really know what you're going to have in the following year. We learned that about 3/4 of their budget, in fact, is federal and state and local government income. So you are very, you know, dependent upon the waves of politics that can happen. We also learned that about 8% of their funding comes from the mortgage recording tax, which we had not been aware of. In New York State law, since 1972, 0.25% of commercial and residential mortgage transactions that goes to Centro, goes to public transit. And obviously, when we had the economic downturn and the housing shortage, housing costs going down, Centro saw a drop. Centro has seen a drop in other areas. But one of the things we also found out was that it's very typical for developers in the city and the county for when they are negotiating their pilot agreements to ask for an exemption of their MRT. Necessity versus choice. This is obviously a key issue. We have a number of people who ride Centro by necessity. About 8% of the city of Syracuse commuters use public transportation. About 80% of those do not even own a car. So this is the only way that many people can get to work, to services, to the doctor, to the grocery stores. We heard many people talk about being stymied by schedules. We also heard how difficult it is to coincide things like shifts, work, and timing. We're now a 24-hour cycle of work, and it's hard to get, you know, buses going all at the right time, so that's difficult. So Centro, of course, is also has to meet the needs of that particular population. They're very committed to that. However, a good transit system is going to rely on more people taking transit by choice. So they have started to implement a few things that we've realized. We did a survey in a group, and much like here, we found out very few people had actually ridden the bus on a regular basis except to go to the state fair. So in order to get more choice riders, Centro has added fare boxes that accept larger bills and give change in credit, day passes, stepped up presence on social media, a redesigned website and schedules, and new system training. They also realize that information is important, so they've made a stronger effort towards this. We found out that in 2013, they implemented a travel training program where they will go to places of employment and work with people to show them how to ride the buses. They also have just been implementing an online trip planner and central bus tracker, so you can look on your phone and see where your bus is when it's coming. And they have a mobile app, which is in beta testing, which I believe is going to be completed by the end of the year. So that's actually also a little bit more convenient. But kind of one of the most exciting things we learned about was Bus Rapid Transit, or BRT, another acronym that we got. We found out that Bus Rapid Transit is something that many communities are turning to. It offers a lower cost, high capacity way of moving people without the fixed lines of light rail. What makes something BRT, there can be dedicated bus lanes. They can time the traffic lights so the buses don't have to stop. There are limited stops. There are special curb cuts sometimes so that they're not holding up traffic. And there's other infrastructure changes. And you can have some flexibility. You can install BRT, but then if things change in a community, you can add to it. SMTC has been studying BRT. They've come up, I'm not sure if it's a full recommendation yet, but November 10th is their next meeting. That two of the corridors that have been mentioned that we learned in our presentation that are possible, and it'll give you an idea of how BRT could possibly work, is if one ran from SU out to Destiny and the Regional Transportation Center, or along James Street in South Ave from Eastwood to OCC. Those have a lot of people on them. We could move very quickly people along there. We also heard NTMR, in fact, from someone from Albany who talked to us about the BRT in Albany. They have a goal of having about 40 miles, and even with the small route that they've started with, which is along their Route 5 corridor, they've seen a 28% increase in their ridership, and their decreased travel times by 20 minutes. So 2 feet and two wheels. Kind of combine this one because a lot of the areas we talk about apply to both. We also want to note that from up front that we did not have time to really spend a lot of time on the fact of curb cuts and accessibility with sidewalks and the care of sidewalks as well as the snow clearing of sidewalks. By no means not something that we don't think is a concern. We just didn't have... if you've been with a study, you know it's kind of drinking from a fire hose, so it's kind of figuring out what you can address at different times. But we do address that in our recommendations. So one of the things we talked about were the different corridors in our community, that some of which we were not all familiar with, or at least we weren't familiar with the status. These are existing walk and bike-friendly projects. The Creek Walk, which many people may be aware of, is completed from Armory Square to Inner Harbor. They just received word that they're going to be able to do the work from Armory Square down to Colvin Street. They also received word that the Loop the Lake, which is the idea of taking the trail all the way around the lake, they just received word they can now connect it to the connective corridor. There is one section of the lake which is a little tricky because of a train tracks. But connective corridor itself, I said Creek Walk. Loop it to the Creek Walk. The connective corridor is obviously, many people are aware of, is a great bike and pedestrian area. It follows the principles of complete streets. It's one of our complete streets models. The Erie Canalway Trail Project is an attempt that I'll go into a little bit further from the town of DeWitt working with the city of Syracuse to complete and close the 14-mile gap that occurs between the end of the trail in DeWitt, and then it picks up again in Camillus. And then they're also working on the Elevating Erie project. And that's just to give you an example of why these things are complicated. Just the Erie Canal project has issues of ownership. New York State Parks, the New York State Canal, Town of DeWitt, the state DOT, and the city of Syracuse are all owners at one point along it. The health benefits, many people obviously are aware of the health benefits of walking and biking. We learned about a great program organized by the American Heart Association, the Downtown Committee, and SUNY Oswego Metro Center called Wednesday Walks, which are held bi-monthly. They're held in downtown Syracuse from June to October. We heard from people talking about not just the health benefits, but also the sort of a little bit of the economic development benefits. Many of them got out of their suburban comfort zone, came downtown, walked around, got a chance to see some of the beautiful buildings. One woman said, "I saw things for the first time." Physical health, we heard, is also a key component of complete streets, which you'll hear us revisiting again and again, because it really works towards the idea of mobility. safety, obviously, as more bike lanes are developed and more walkers hit the street, we must consider safety. Many of you, a good example of what you might think about is, have any of you driven along Euclid, particularly as students are going to classes? There are no bike lanes on Euclid. There are sidewalks, certainly, but the bikes are out in the road, sidewalks, and in the winter, often the students are out in the road. So there are some areas that we need to look at. Another thing we, in fact, learned about was a term called sharrows. Has anyone heard the term sharrows before? Because I had never heard it between this. So you have a bike lane. You know what a bike lane is, right? You've seen a bike lane. You've seen it with the a little image of the bike on it. I believe the standardized colors, is there a green standardized color for it now or something like that? So, but if you ever are in a road and you see an image of the bike in the road, that means share, it's a sharrow. It's an arrow that you share. So you share the road with the bikes. And then it's basically telling you this is a very active bike area. So Euclid would be one of those areas. There have been a fair number of bike and pedestrian accidents, and they are notable mostly because the chances of greater injury, obviously, is stronger with them. So we need to be very concerned about that. We will refer in our recommendations about some bike and safety things we need to think about. In terms of economic well-being, walking and bicycling obviously plays an important part. Mary-Kate told the story of Lugendo and how much bikes were important to him. It is culturally a very strong element of the refugee. Many of the refugees and the Latino community are used to using bikes for transportation. Many businesses aren't accessible by either bikes or pedestrians, and the buses, as I said, you know, do their best, but they have to worry about shifts. So if you think about when you're driving down Erie Boulevard or you're out at Carrier Circle, how hard it would be for someone who really wants to rely on only a bike to get to those places. We also know, and Mary-Kate will refer to it, but demographics are going to show that many more people want walkability. We have a very active community. More and more people are using bikes in the winter. They even have these big fat tires now. And many people notice that Centro has the front of the buses where you can put the bike, so there's more of a connection with that. We have seen that a lot of communities around the country have started very successful bike sharing programs, and we think that's kind of an exciting future for us as well. The one thing we want to stress that came up with the Complete Streets is that we feel that anytime anyone's making any progress towards or plans towards change, particularly, for example, around the biking, when we have particular communities for whom bicycle transportation is important, is that those populations are brought to the table early and not late, and the conversations are had. Which leads me a little bit to planning, is how CNY plans to move. So I just want to just touch, because you might hear this expression about smart growth. It's a principle that is basically adopted by increasingly around the country, stronger and stronger, basically aims to be an alternative to suburban sprawl. It's not communities with suburban sprawl have automobile-oriented transportation, poorly suited for walking, cycling, and transit. Communities that embrace smart growth do not. They have multimodal transportation, and they support all those things. In terms of planning, communities with sprawl have streets designed to maximize motor traffic going as quickly as possible. Communities developed with smart growth principles have streets designed to accommodate a variety of activities and are traffic calming. So that's really what Complete Streets came out of, was the smart growth movement. It's a core element. It actually has been a New York State law since 2011 that requires that state, county, and local agencies consider the convenience and mobility of all users when developing transportation projects that utilize state and federal funding. The video showed us a little bit, traffic calming measures, sidewalks, bike lanes, special curb cuts, things of that nature. Our Onondaga County Health Department has been very involved in promoting Complete Streets, noting the how important it is for different populations, people with disabilities, older adults, and those who don't have a car. It helps them stay connected to their community. It's a safe and appealing to residents and to visitors, which means it can be very attractive to retail and commercial development. And planning that incorporates the needs can reduce automobile traffic and improve the environment and reduce the need to have to constantly work on the roads. Just so you know, we have three county municipalities and have embraced Complete Streets. The Connective Corridor, as I mentioned, the City of Syracuse is very supportive of Complete Streets, Connective Corridor being a good example of one. DeWitt has embraced it. They've not implemented it yet. And Fayetteville. So if any of you have been in the village of Fayetteville on Brooklee Drive and sat and had coffee outside Pastificio, which is a restaurant there, you will see these what are called speed humps. And they really slow the cars down. You see bicyclists, you see pedestrians. It's having someone who's down there a lot, it's a much more calm area to be. Short, tiny, but worth it. The city, we just wanted to note, they have a Rezone Syracuse, which is a program that they started in May. They're working to change and revise the zoning, which hasn't been changed since early 20th century. They want to start looking at things like smart growth, traditional neighborhood development, transit-oriented development, which is really thinking about what transit's going to be needed when you put up a building or a store or apartment complex. They have embraced bike lanes, and they've done a really superb job on getting more bike lanes into our city. Obviously, it's not financially possible to implement it all at once. And as I mentioned, they and the town of DeWitt work together, have launched a competition for elevating Erie, which would be new designs to make Erie Boulevard more friendly and attractive. So the town of DeWitt, we did want to point out also, is one of only two municipalities in the entire county which has a planner, a dedicated planner. Sam Gordon was very involved with this project. Town of Clay is the other one. DeWitt has adopted and worked with their community in adopting a sustainability plan and working on it and building, which they find admittedly is an inadequate trail and bike structure, but they're very committed to fixing that. Obviously, the Erie Canal extension would be one of those areas. They've investigated all sorts of land use patterns and are working to how they can improve the sidewalk system. And finally, the county. In 2011, County Executive Joni Mahoney introduced a land use plan that embraced smart growth principles to promote social, environmental, economic sustainability of existing and future land development patterns. But the county legislature has so far failed to approve it. The strongest criticism has been opposition to the plan's effort to limit expansion of public infrastructure, such as sewer lines, into new areas if there's no growth to support it. So another term we learned about was infill development. Build where there already are sewer lines extended rather than sending out new ones. So transportation is constantly evolving as populations change, and Mary Kate's going to talk a little bit about that.
So a glimpse into the future, what does it hold? One of the great pieces of information we found is a 2015 study by the National Association of Realtors, Community and Transportation Preferences, and they've really found that millennials, which are that 18 to 34 age group, some great statistics, about 83% of them like walking, and yet 71% of them like driving and actually own a car. 50% prefer living within an easy walk of other places. Millennials use public transportation more than any other generation, and that was not specific to large cities, small cities. It really was across the board. And the preferences for millennials and baby boomers are actually somewhat similar in that both of them really point, all these preferences point towards elements of smart growth and complete streets and a little bit of what Heidi just spoke about.
So I'll just put all three of these up in the interest of time real quickly. Basically, they're fairly self-explanatory. We kind of covered those. We do see, obviously, the transportation cannot be looked at without looking at the whole, and it's a very complex system. The impending change of I-81, we deliberately decided not to relitigate that because that was actually part of an earlier study, but it's going to change. It's going to come down. We don't know whether it's going to be rebuilt or an alternative is going to be put in there, but quite frankly, this is an opportunity, and it's something that the Moving People Transportation Coalition has been looking at quite a lot, and also that we're very aware that the whole issue of concentrated poverty, which has become more and more, people are becoming more and more aware of it, and that it really limits people's transportation opportunities, create the situation, and so we need to really look at transportation as a way of fixing that. So we have a number of recommendations. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on all of them, just kind of pop through them really quickly. Again, we mentioned we need sustainable funding for public transit that they can plan with. We need to make sure that more and more people can utilize it and that we listen to the populations. We want more complete streets. We really urge the county legislature to pass the county land use plan. We believe in transit-oriented development, so when you're going to be putting up development, one of the first questions that has to happen is, how are you going to get people there? Centro needs to be brought into that discussion very early and not suddenly told at the end, oh, by the way, you need to send a bus route to this development out in the middle of nowhere. We need to have more town and county planners. Working with Sam and our conversations with Clay made us realize how valuable that is. We want to have more bike lanes and corridors, obviously. We love the idea that Creek Walk and Loop the Lake and all these other projects are happening. We need to have more bike and safety programs, not just for bike riders, for whom the rule just might be don't be stupid, but for drivers who don't really know necessarily how always to function. But both of them really need to kind of learn about using it. We want to improve and clear the sidewalks to meet the needs for a walkable city for all the populations we've been talking about. Community stakeholders really should become more aware of SMTC, use it as a resource. It's got some marvelous, really deep studies, and they do a lot of community engagement. We want the really support the mayor and all the upstate mayors who have been lobbying for Uber and Lyft and other innovative ride sharing. It is in New York City, and the legislature and the governor have not supported it coming to any of the upstate cities. And we need to recognize transportation as an essential part of alleviating poverty. And then finally, that this is actually happening. We believe that HSLC and the Moving People Coalition have taken on, and they will schedule quarterly meetings of citizen stakeholders to review progress on all of these things. So basically, just really quickly, I think we've made the case of how transportation is a part of a larger whole, and we are all transportation people. And now we have time for questions. We do want to emphasize that we think that really the most important thing is looking at transportation as an early part of any sort of planning rather than kind of plopping it in later in the process as an important element.
I was very interested in your numbers on the average commute time. Do you take into consideration the possibility that staggering when businesses start? For example, if coming here this morning was 45 minutes from Cazenovia, if we had started at 7:15 or even 9:15, it would have made maybe a 30-minute drive instead of 50% more.
Hi, my name is James DiAugustino. I'm the director of the Syracuse Metropolitan Transportation Council. In terms of staggering work commute times, that tends to be an issue more in cities that have transportation infrastructure that doesn't meet the needs of the people. And we really don't have that problem in terms of the fact that our roadways can't get people to where they need ahead of time. Some institutions have done that, like Upstate Hospital and some other institutions on the Hill. They've had to do that because of the crush at garage times and on and off of the interstate system. So you see that in isolated locations where there are isolated transportation issues. But in general, our community doesn't have that issue, given the number of people we have in our economy.
One thing I was a little disappointed not to see up there is more talk about the private transportation systems that go on in this community. And I think it was the Salvation Army that said its second biggest expense was transportation. I drive by the city in the summertime and see thousands of school buses idle. And yet all the people who have their own buses to take kids to day camp. And I see resources that are rotting because people have their little silos and little fiefdoms, and we have laws and regulations to prevent sharing. And I think that's one of the things that we're talking about moving people, we need to work harder on. And I don't know who's responsible, who can do it, who has the political power, but I think it's kind of sad to see these resources being wasted because we don't know how to cooperate.
One of the things that I breezed by and cut out because of timing was that there are some, the private transportation is happening a lot. Human service agencies, Providence Services, a lot of people are a lot of the businesses are sometimes shuttling people and handling private things. We did not speak specifically to the idea, though we did make some recommendations for it regarding pre-K and school transport, because that's a pretty big issue. But it's certainly something I think because of what you're talking about affects, moving people and human service agencies. It'll probably be something I assume will be talked about at the quarterly meetings.
Hi. My concern is not so much about most of the people in this room who have cars. When my son comes home, he lives in California. If he's home for more than a month, I have to get him a car because I live out in Clay. He's taken the bus. He likes to go to libraries and museums and stuff. He said it takes him all day to take a bus from our house in Liverpool to get to Lemoyne College and come back. I have a small business where I put people with disabilities into employment, and it is one of my biggest problems. The buses at Centro have to be back in the garage by midnight. If they want to take a second shift, am I going on too long? The buses stop running and you can't even get them in a position. And, you know, I'm not so worried about me. But my concern is for people who can't afford to have a car, how are they supposed to get back and forth to work when the buses have to get parked that early at night? We don't even send buses to the major employers in town that have 4,000 or 5,000 employees. We don't even make that available. And I think that's the part that bothers me the most. I spend a lot of time in Charlotte. I thought that movie was really cute. You should see the blue line that they have in the near north side in Charlotte. It's gorgeous. It runs right in back downtown through all the gentrified areas. Walk two blocks over into the poor area, and you've got 80-year-old women walking up a hill to take a public bus, and some of them don't even feel comfortable riding on that bus because it's mostly upper-middle-class young people.
So one of the other solutions that through our work in the study that we found would be very helpful are services like Uber and Lyft. And as we mentioned, too, unfortunately, the governor and the legislature have not made it possible for those services to take place outside of New York City. And I think, again, that's one of the reasons why our mayor and the mayors of Rochester, Albany, and Buffalo are really doing a lot to help bring those services to our community, because it is something that's very well needed. Jim?
First, I don't work for Centro, but the director of Centro couldn't be here today. This isn't because he doesn't view this as an important topic. He just happened to have his vacation scheduled today. Couple of things. I live in Clay as well. And I have to take the bus on occasion, and you're right, it's horrible. Not that the bus is horrible, but the commute times for the bus is horrible. It doesn't work well for suburban commuters. It has to do with the nature of our community, how we're spread out, and how limited Centro has with its funding. So that's not an easily solved problem. It serves people really well in the city and in areas very, very close to the city, reasonably well. So the further you get out in concentric rings, the worse it gets, and it kind of gets worse logarithmically almost in terms of its ability to serve people. That's not a secret. A couple of things are being worked to try and solve that. You know, Uber and Lyft are great things. We're in the middle of studying something right now called a work link study. You might have heard that Syracuse might have a bit of a poverty problem. It's been in the paper a little bit, right? Okay. So one of the questions we get asked a lot is, how can we hook up people who are in the more entry level of the job force to the jobs that are out there, because there are jobs out there. We kind of down talk Syracuse's economy as having no jobs, but there's actually unfilled jobs right in our community right now today. But we have to hook these people up. There's private services like Providence that are trying to fill that gap in some areas, but there's other things that need to be done. There has to be a priority in our community. So we're trying to identify different techniques, different programs that can be implemented, different people to house those programs. Centro can't be a fix-all shop for that. They don't have the resources. I think they're a piece of the puzzle, but I think there's other elements that are going to have to rise in our community. We're studying that now. Within the next year, we're going to have some of that. But you're right. In the meanwhile, if you want to get from Clay to downtown, it's a struggle, and I'm not going to pretend it's not.
Thank you. I found it so interesting when you said that, because we have good parking options, that also cuts down on people's need to take public transportation. And I know it's something like a chicken and an egg approach. You know, if you have more people taking public transportation, then you can have more route options. So I wondered if you've taken a look at segmenting out how many people might take public transportation, if we could make it, you know, a thing to do.
You go to any major city, I'll use Boston as a great example, you do not expect to have cheap parking. You might not have parking at all. It's very hard in big cities to be able to afford parking. In Syracuse, there is so much parking, and it is so cheap, and it is so below market rate, it is ridiculous. Now, I know that's unpopular because some people say, I can't park right in front of my favorite restaurant, favorite store, or where I work. But the reality is, you have to walk a little bit sometimes, but the parking's there, and it's very, very affordable. That's a hard problem to solve politically. Do you want to be the county executive or the mayor or the superintendent of a town that says, now we're going to raise parking rates by 1,000%? That doesn't usually go over well with people. But some where it has happened, it's happened because land use costs have risen so much that parking is just not an affordable use of that land anymore. Therefore, parking costs rise. We don't have that problem in this town because of the nature of our economy. Most property here is very affordable compared to other metropolitan areas. So that's that. So is it the chicken or the egg? Which has to come first? I don't know. But that is a problem. We have identified it.
I'd like to comment on the county issue right now. I'd like you all to know that not all the county legislators are against using our appropriate resources rather than sprawling out, number one. And my constituency is all within the city, and I have a lot of the people who are refugees, and then I have a lot of baby boomers. And one of the issues, you know, you talk about difficulty getting into the city, but just getting around the city is a real problem for them. Even a lot of the high rises, senior citizen places, they can get to doctor's appointments, but if they want to go downtown to a play or a concert, if they're not home by 7 o'clock, they're stuck down there. So there are issues within the city that really need to be looked at. And we do put resources into really nice things like the Loop of the Lake, but you got to remember that's for pleasure, for health. And we have things that they need to get to the grocery store, they need to get to their church, they need to be able to visit their friends and family. And it would be nice if they could go downtown and see a play once in a while.
Again, it comes down often to the idea that there can be more bus routes when there's more density. So as we are seeing more density happen, I think we will begin to see that. I also think we're seeing increasing people wanting to commute by bike. So in that sense, quite frankly, the Loop, the Lake, and the Creek Walk actually could be helpful. But ultimately, aside from the Centro situation, and quite frankly, everything we've been saying here, even communities that think they have amazing public transit also still have these concerns. You know, I tell you, I go to visit my sister in D.C., and I can't even speak highly enough about Uber. It's like right there. It gets me everywhere I need to go. And so it is kind of a shame that we don't have something like that.
Well, we are looking at bus rapid transit, as was mentioned earlier. And the cool thing about the way we're looking about bus rapid transit is that the way we're looking at it, it will basically create an X across the entire city of Syracuse through the routes that we're connecting, which would greatly, greatly reduce commute times by public transit, no matter where you want to go, because between the existing transit routes and an X that goes across the city that moves very, very fast, it would dramatically let you get from one portion of the city to another with greatly reduced travel times.
When is the Erie Canal bike trail going to be complete? And I ask that question because it will increase the amount of people coming by bike probably by 500%. Reason, it will come from DeWitt, from Fayetteville into the city. You'll be able to travel faster than you can in the car. It will come from Camillus, Westvale, right into the city. We're waiting for it. It was scheduled to be done in 2005. Syracuse was the last element of the entire 400-mile trail that was to be completed.
Right. And also, I just want to state, Sam Gordon couldn't be here today because he's actually meeting with some people to talk about this very issue who are coming into town to look at some routes.
This past year, SMTC completed a comprehensive study of how to close that gap. We completed exactly what needs to be done, the preferred paths that should be connected, and how much money it would cost to do that. We don't build stuff. You want to talk to the people that own the pieces of property, and those people are identified in the report. Look on our website, download it, take a look at it. Give them a call. Tell them it's important to you. They have money, and they spend it where their constituents tell them they want to spend it.
Thank you very much to Heidi, Mary-Kate, and Jim for answering our questions. and giving us a preview of the actual study that's coming out very soon. It's on its way to the printer in the next week or so, so that's why it's not available today. But for every OCL member, you'll get one in the mail, of course. And I want to thank everyone who came today and hope that it was informational for everyone. Thank you.